Okay, and welcome back. Hour number two with Mr. Bill Tompkins again tonight. William Tompkins, what remarkable programs we have done. George Filer is with us, and Frank Chile, who has made these appearances possible. Frank, are you there?
I'm here, Jeff.
How do you think it's going so far? What do you? I know you know Mr. Tompkins very well, but this is always fascinating for me. I'm sure it is for you, even though you've heard some of it before.
Well, I'm hoping that he may go into chat with me about a command and control procedure that he was tasked with putting together that basically was for the entire planet, including the visitors that are here.
Wow.
And he would be happy to share that with you tonight. That's a heck of a story.
All right, we'll get into that in a few minutes. Major Filer, are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
What do you think?
Well, I have, you know, similar stories to Bill's, and we actually met out in California after I gave a speech for MUFON, and we've been in touch off and on ever since. But one thing I'd like to state is that our Air Force radars were regularly picking up UFOs over the, you know, the west there. They, they said that they came down along the coastline from Alaska, you know, to Washington, Oregon, and California, and often landed in the Northern California area. Then the fact that he talked, this lady, an alien, talked to these people. I know that sounds rather far-fetched, but I also had a lady who claimed to be an alien talking to me. That's one of the reasons that I do this, that she said it was very important that we get this information out, that the aliens are here and they care for us, and they're very upset about the fact that we're not taking care of the planet.
Oh, my God. We've sacrificed all claim to being the custodial species, in my opinion. We have destroyed it. We don't deserve to have sway over things. We really don't. This is all very discouraging. What do you think of the Medford connection? This is interesting. I wonder if there's an underground rail between your Medford and my Medford.
Could be. Now, in our Medford, we have, I'm the president of the Air Force Association of Southern New Jersey, and we also look into UFOs and the whole connection, and investigate a lot of sightings, and we're often reported over large power plants or the electrical lines coming from there, and it almost looks like they may be taking off our electrical energy.
It does look like they may have some interest in feeding on the grid, as it were. You're right.
It's
very interesting, to be sure. Okay, Frank Chile, again, what was it you suggested that you would like to have Bill go into?
If Bill would be so kind as to share the story.
The story of what? Whoop, we just lost him.
I think we lost him, but the
Right at the right moment. Post. Did you notice that? The story of
the International Command Post concerning.
Okay, very good.
Bill had designed.
All right. Okay, we'll go into that now. Okay, hang on, George. We're going to turn you back down and bring Bill Tompkins back up. Hello, William. Welcome back. Hour number two. And the International Command and Control Post. What is that all about? You there, Bill? Whoops, do we lose Bill, too? All right, let me have George Filer back.
We're
Hello, George.
Some kind of problems along
yeah,
the line.
Well, we've, Frank Chile's been abducted. Bill Tompkins has been abducted again. Maybe we'll be able to get them back. This is very strange, right at the right point in that sentence. You knew about it already, so. Well, we'll get him back in the International Control Center. We have a lot of, you have a lot of reports of UFO activity in the Medford area there. We've had a lot of them here, certainly around Mount Shasta. It's a main corridor. The Interstate 5 highway goes right up Northern California, right past Mount Shasta. It's a spectacular drive, and right on up all the way to the Canadian border, right through Medford, Oregon.
I don't know if you... One thing about the radar operators that were telling me about the fact that they had noticed where these craft were going into, not far from Mount Shasta.
Mm-hmm.
They had, when they, you know, they had time off for the weekend or whatever, they drove down from the radar site. And the paper was full of stories about Bigfoot, that people had seen Bigfoot, and there
right.
seemed to be some kind of connection between the UFOs and, you know, Sasquatch or Bigfoot. Now, we've noticed this connection at various places around the country. Of course, we can't tie it together exactly, but...
Correct. Yeah, I've heard that over the years of doing this a number of times. And there are Bigfoot in this area. There was a psychologist from Grants Pass who had taken his family to the coast about an hour away from Grants Pass, maybe less, and they were on a hiking trail, and he left his wife and I guess it was two kids on the trail, and he went up around a tree to take care of business. And while he was on the other side of the tree, he looked back to check on his wife and two kids, and they were standing on the trail waiting for him. This was in the newspapers and made the national news. Didn't last long, but it made it. He looked and saw his wife and two kids, and behind them, about 15 feet behind them, standing behind a tree, was an 8 or 9 foot Sasquatch, a Bigfoot, just watching them. And it scared the hell out of him. He apparently zipped up and ran back, grabbed his wife and kids, and they ran. He said, "Run!" And they ran all the way back to the trailhead. And interesting. So I had him on the program. Very interesting story. He was still shook up several days later when I had him on the program. No doubt about what he saw. None. So yeah, they are in the area. Let's see if Bill and are you there, Frank? First.
I'm here. Yeah, I'm sorry we blew a fuse on that.
Well, it's who knows. Somebody's playing games. Bill Tompkins, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, very good. Let's turn George and Frank down and bring Bill back up. Now, we've had requests from Frank that you could talk, if you would, to us about the International Command Control Center that you helped design to apparently regulate or at least observe and monitor and surveil much of the on and off planet traffic that comes and goes from here. What do you know about that that you can tell us?
Well, actually, the original drawing is in the book Selected by Extraterrestrials, and that is a small version, but that was a facility that I designed for the Air Force when I was in the secret think tank at Douglas. And it's an interesting situation in that the design was to use the military as a command center over the space around the planet, and using satellites, and then later on satellites that were much further out, they were able to track extraterrestrial vehicles coming in and going back out. And this facility then is under the ground in Omaha, Nebraska. And it's...
Now that's where the Strategic Air Command headquarters are.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that at Omaha?
Yes. And so this facility is way down underneath the ground, and it's completely covered with about 17 feet of pound feet of concrete. And so it has an elevator that takes you down. And when I was working for General Dynamics at a corporate level, we had an office back in Crystal City, which is tied right next to the Pentagon. And there's an underground facility in that area, which is called Crystal City. It's a city underneath the ground, right next to the Pentagon. And so I was working there for a while, and the Air Force then sent a memo to the company, and I was invited to a secret meeting in that underground facility. And this is like, you know, 40 years later after I did the design.
Uh-huh.
And so I got to go down the elevator, and I had to go in and visit the whole facilities as it was being operated. And yes, there are tunnels that connect that facility to others, which are Air Force tunnels. But
that must have been quite a scene for you to go down there and see something you had designed years
yes,
earlier.
And actually, we were doing the next 10-year program for the Air Force. In other words, what are you going to do for the next 10 years? And
so they're 10 years out. Do they have a 20-year plan also?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the program actually was 75-80% extraterrestrial, of course. And
when you say 75-80% extraterrestrial, are you saying the extraterrestrials were running it, were pushing it, supervising it? How were they involved with it?
Okay, you have your Air Force bombers, and you do things with them if you're going to be at war. And so, unfortunately, there's a great deal of problem with our own aircraft involved with extraterrestrial vehicles. And so you can't do a 10-year program without actually being involved in extraterrestrial.
Can you be more, Bill?
Okay.
I want you to, if you would, Strategic Air Command Headquarters in Omaha at Offutt Air Force Base, everybody knows that, but this underground facility you're talking about is not SAC headquarters, it's something else. But what I want you to tell us is how ET was involved. And you say there are four or five different species on the planet that come and go and have underground facilities in many cases. Which one or ones are you talking about, and did you ever meet any of them?
I never have met them. I have to take slight revenge with that because I had several of them working with me in the Apollo program. But
Are you talking about ones that could pass for us that you were around? I'm not talking about grays or the insect types, the praying mantis types, or the reptilian types. Were you around?
Humanoid.
Were you around the tall blonde Nordics, the humanoids, at all that you know of?
Well,
I guess you were.
I had, at Douglas, my secretary was, and the secretary for the propulsion group also was another young lady.
Uh-huh.
And there was a third gentleman who came in and supported us. All three of them were Nordics. And they were all three beautiful people, extremely intelligent. And the Apollo was successful because of their inputs primarily into my head to do things different than what NASA contracts said to do. And we were successful by changing it all. But I haven't met or seen any other extraterrestrials, what I was trying to say.
Okay. All right.
But at this underground facility, it's the center for documentation in the solar system. And so you have planets in the solar system, and you've got moons here.
Uh-huh.
And then you have extraterrestrial vehicles on other, like on Mars, and they have bases there. And they have bases on other, like Saturn's moons, the ones that are habitable. And then they have their facilities here.
So are you saying, Bill, excuse the interruption, please. I'm trying to keep this so people can wrap their minds around it. Are you saying that this was rather like an air traffic control center for our solar system? all the planets, all the moons, all the craft that we knew about, where they were flying, who was flying them, what they were doing. Is this that kind of a control platform that you're describing?
It's knowledge. It's not control.
Okay, I didn't mean to say control like they were ordering movement of craft, but yes, knowledge, data.
Yeah, we have
right.
extremely advanced satellites, military satellites, who can look way out.
Yeah.
And so the extraterrestrial vehicles come and go. And more recently, I guess that's been stopped about a year and a half ago. But up until that time, it's just free territory for them.
Well, there's still footage coming in from the International Space Station showing craft going past the station, both directions, it would appear. If you look at the footage, it's very interesting. There's a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, these satellites, I think, are the geosynchronous satellites that are 18,000 miles out that look away from the planet as well as toward it, and they do record the comings and goings of all kinds of different machines, correct?
That's correct, and that's what the center is for. It doesn't have any command capability.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Some of the satellites are military vehicles, and there can be a certain amount of damage done to some of the extraterrestrials in certain cases. But we have really no control over our area of planets in the solar system.
All right. I meant I was trying to get at that they were like an air traffic control center. They were just monitoring and compiling data as to what was going on. That's my intent. They're monitoring things. This is all whenever someone suggests that we have technology that can somehow countermand or otherwise influence or intimidate extraterrestrials, I kind of wince about that, because these people, these beings that come here and go, would seemingly have technology that could broom anything we have into the trash can. But you're suggesting that we may have abilities that go far beyond what we'd think, and that we can deal with these people. In other words, let me get to the punchline. Can you see a viable defense put up by human beings on this planet against a race of extraterrestrials who had hostile intent against us, a war? Could we hold our own in any way? Do we have that kind of technology?
I have to say you're asking a $64 one. And knowing what I know, I can't answer the question.
All right. You're still under stricture that there are some things you can't talk about.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, you've just given me a very intriguing non-answer, so we'll leave it at that, and I won't push. And I thank you for that. So, very good. Carry on.
Well, I just want to finish. We're trying to get back to Admiral Hugh Webster, and in putting together a command control center in a Navy reserve center up there in Medford, Oregon. They had the classrooms, so we set up two classrooms to step down type seating arrangement with computers with the capability of programming missions. Well, of course, we didn't have any computers, so I had a friend of mine that was on commanding that was on Naval Air Station Miramar. At that time, the Navy had Miramar. And he had a bunch of F-14 computer controls. So I asked him if some way could they were being replaced, could I get those 14? So he made arrangements, and they shipped them up to our reserve center. And we were setting this program up so that we could train not only sea cadets, but we could train the Navy reserve personnel in actual combat-type control missions. And so obviously this rang a lot of bells in Washington, in the Pentagon, and we were getting a lot of credit for this. But the point is that Admiral Hugh Webster was not only a president of the San Diego Council, the largest one in the country, but he was essentially corporate Navy League at a very high level. And so he then initiated a similar program in the San Diego Council. And that was then to be a prototype for possibly every council in the country. And I won't get into why that didn't take place, but the effort was being made. And but the point is that he was extremely knowledgeable about battleship Navy. He was not knowledgeable about the Space Navy. So I essentially educated him on programs that I have been involved in, and then he represented us back in Crystal City, where the corporate of Navy League operations were working, actually with active Navy. And so he ran with the ball, and we were getting tremendous support from all over the country for this center. And now, this is in a very rural farm.
We're going to go through the break, Todd. Thanks. Go ahead, Bill.
So this is in a rural area in southern Oregon, and you wouldn't think that what we're saying could be operating there.
Was any of this, I know southern Oregon very well, was any of this underground here? Now, if you can't tell me, don't. It's okay, but I'm just...
No.
It was above ground, all right?
Yeah, but there were underground facilities in northern Oregon and in Seattle.
Okay.
And the Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, there are in every western state, actually.
Right.
And, but the point we were getting to here is that the extraterrestrial vehicles going in and coming out of different areas of Mount Shasta is a very, very old thing. If you've never been up there, you don't know about it, but if you ever lived up there or visited up there, everybody's going to tell you about it because
right.
they watch them like almost weekly, daily.
Right.
And it's extremely interesting that the Navy League with the old airplanes were not able to locate the doors. So what they did then is they took these, not Jeeps, they're a six-wheel sort of semi-truck type thing that the Army has, and they use these to drive all around the mountain looking for the holes, the doors in the vehicle, in the side of the mountain.
When was this, Bill, approximately? How many years ago? 10, 15, 20?
Yes, about 18 years ago.
All right.
And and many of these officers had their own business up there, and they flew their own airplanes.
Hmm.
And so they're not just knowledgeable about what's happening with Mount Shasta, but they know all about the UFO sightings all over the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking back and forth with different pilots. So it was a tremendous effort for us, because we had so many people we could depend on, highly technical people, military. It's amazing.
That is remarkable. Just a quick note, tomorrow night, Peter Davenport will be here with some extraordinary eyewitness accounts for you. Don't miss tomorrow night either. So we've got a lot of wonderful things this week to intrigue your mind. All right, this whole issue of Southern Oregon playing a key role, very interesting to me. I'm not in Medford. Ashland, Oregon is right next to Medford, and the Strategic Air Command headquarters are in Omaha, Nebraska. Guess where the Strategic Air Command and Aerospace Museum is located? In Ashland, Nebraska. So we're getting Medford and Ashland all over the place here. It's weird. Maybe not so weird. I don't know. Okay. All right. Now this is bringing us to a point where I have to ask the ET groups that are here. We are aware of them. They are operating and have operated obviously for a long time underground in enormous caverns, connected by tunnels that are very deep, even deeper than our systems. We run into their tunnels, we run into their caverns while drilling. If you look at underground drilling machines, do a Google search, you'll find some of these enormous machines from the 1970s when they were still taking pictures of them. They've stopped. They don't take many pictures. Oh, there's some commercial models they do show, but these were early on, and one of them in particular has the star and bars of the United States, and it says U.S. Air Force on it. And you wonder, what the hell is it made up to have the livery of the Air Force if it's an underground tunnel boring machine? But this was in the 70s, and that's 50 years ago. So what do they have now? It must be really something. It's said they can go, we've talked about this, how many miles a day can they go in some of these machines to drill tunnels?
They can drill actually at 6-10 miles an hour, and this is unbelievable. The extraterrestrials, it's unbelievable.
Well, they
and
just
they
like a knife through butter.
And they convert all the material into lining for their tunnels, which then they're electrically sighted, so they are lit all the time. Unbelievable capability.
Our machines don't go that fast, but we can still do pretty well. So if you do a search and look at the machines that we had that were being shown in the 1970s and understand that technology doesn't wait for anybody, where are we now? And it would be very simple to imagine a cross-country network of tunnels that we have built given the technology that we have right now. Not a problem at all.
You're right.
Heck, we've been digging underground since World War II ended. Long time ago. We have so much underground. And even during the war, Berlin, the Germans, built, it is said that whatever you see above ground, that's, I think, one-third of what's actually there. Two-thirds of it is underground. So they have enormous things during the war that they built in Berlin. Anyhow, it's all a much different world than the average person would ever even dream of. Okay,
absolutely.
Bill, what would you like to talk about next? This has all been just extraordinary. Wow.
Well,
now, you will get from Frank a picture of Howard Hughes and the final interview with John Knudsen Northrop, explaining all about the B-1, lots of color footage of it. A remarkable airplane, remarkable man. So
Frank is real good about getting pictures out to an article, so
yeah.
Yes, I'll
he'll get it
that.
To you. Yeah. Okay, what are we going to talk about next?
I'd like to hit two subjects, if we could.
Sure.
One of the subjects were the photographs that Frank had mailed me of different German UFOs.
Yes.
And I don't know whether you have a copy there. Jeff, do you have any of the photographs?
I have, yes, I do have them. I can put them up on a link here. I can get that done within 5 minutes or so. I didn't know we were going to talk about those, so I'll put them up, sure.
Okay, while that's being done, I would like to hit just another subject for a minute.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Admiral Rick Abada. At Naval Air Station San Diego in like 1939.
Right.
And his work, where he's wearing two hats, he's commander of Naval Air Station San Diego, a very large base that converts older aircraft into new flyable type and sends them back out to the fleet.
Uh-huh.
So it's like an enormous aircraft company. And the chief engineers is a Navy captain, and all of the different officers that are in there use the same titles that they would if they were working for TRW or Douglas. That's an enormous effort. And his, of course, hobby was the program where the Admiral had these 29 Navy lieutenant operatives that brought the information back from Germany about the agreements that Hitler had made with the reptilians, and where the arrangement was that they would support Germany, the extraterrestrials would support Germany, not with information about vehicles, but actually gave the German SS 17 different UFOs, and then Germany put those in production. Now, the operatives did modify the information that they had. This was for 4 years in the Navy, and that's all I did. But I worked for the Admiral as staff and reviewed this information that the operatives bring back.
Right.
Now, they did have problems and changed what the mission really was, what Hitler's mission was with the extraterrestrials. And so I'd like to say here, and I'm hoping that there's going to be people who will ask questions, but essentially, the mission really was for Germany to put the 17 different types of UFOs and their weapons in production in large underground production facilities in Germany and in the occupied areas of Europe.
Right.
Put these in production, train the personnel, and assemble them into naval space battle groups. Now, the mission was to also was to eliminate some of the people on the planet that they didn't like and make slaves out of every other country's people on the planet.
This is coming from the ETs.
This is the agreement that the ETs made with Hitler and the SS.
In order to get this technology, I gotcha.
Okay, now, the agreement then was that they would put these various vehicles in production because these were extraterrestrial vehicles that are already operating.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of telling them, here's a blueprint, go build them, they gave them these vehicles. So there was no necessity for having to figure out other than how to operate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second part of the agreement was for Germany to leave the planet, go out into the galaxy, along with the reptilians, with both the reptilians' naval battle groups and now the German naval battle groups, and take over other stars' planet and make the people on those planets their slaves.
Now, are you talking
about the agreement that was made with Hitler and the mission, which is totally different with what's been written, okay?
Right.
I'm trying to say we need to get down to the start of things. And these operatives didn't believe this. The Admiral didn't believe it. We didn't believe it. But as further information kept coming in, they modified it to what I just said. And so it was not that just Hitler was going to enslave this planet, but their mission and the agreements were they would operate the Russian Space Navy battle groups with the extraterrestrial, the reptilian naval battle groups, space groups, and they would do the same thing that they were going to do to this planet.
Two other planets. Now, you're talking about outside of the solar system, right? Or are you talking about inside the solar system?
Anybody in the solar system first.
Mm-hmm.
And to practice on. But the real mission was to go out into the galaxy, find other stars' planets, and enslave them.
Pretty ambitious stuff. This agreement with the reptilians was signed or agreed upon between Germany allegedly and the reptilians in the late 30s, early 40s? What is your time frame on that?
Actually, it was in the 20s.
Oh.
And, but it was just after the young lady started building her spacecraft, her transport spacecraft. And they allowed her to go ahead and develop her vehicles, and because they were given vehicles. She had to design them and build them. But Hitler didn't have to do that because he was given finished vehicles. And so the unbelievable statement that we just made happened so fast. The capability that they were into was so fast, almost they didn't care if Germany got bombed or not, because they were moving everything to Antarctica in two smaller caverns in Antarctica adjacent to the reptilians' three large caverns where they were operating with their equipment and building their equipment there. So people don't understand that we really didn't win that war. With Paperclip, the same Germans that were working on these systems came over here and did Apollo.
Right.
And they infiltrated into many of the aerospace and the biomedical research. And they're still operating there today.
Well, see, that probably ties into the Howard Hughes medical...
Absolutely. I forgot to bring that up, and you're absolutely correct. That's where it came from.
Well, this is really remarkable. People would say, listening, well, wait a minute, why would the German government allow the country to be overrun and destroyed when they allegedly cared so very much about their people? They had the first war on cancer, they had the first anti-smoking campaign, they had they promoted vegetarianism, they did a lot of humane things for the people in that country. Why would they allow Germany to lose and be so utterly decimated when they could have taken these UFOs up and swept the skies clean of bombers from England, bombers from America that were staged in England? They could have completely won the air war.
Okay, no, they were doing that. And they were like 5 minutes from accomplishing it, or a few months.
Uh-huh.
But the point is, they already made their decision that that's what the mission was going to be. Now, you're aware of the programs, plural, that the young blonde girls in Germany were taken into these facilities all over Germany and the occupied country and put into situations where the troops would come and get the girls pregnant and have just Aryan population.
Right.
That same plan was to be initiated out into other stars, planets, and expand the Aryan relationship.
Mm-hmm.
In German. And so this was a massive program to create just certain type of people.
Now these are very close to the tall blondes, Nordics they call them. Same kind of, not DNA, but the same kind of people. That's what you're telling me, I think.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that that's been confusing for a long time. And,
okay.
There's not just one group of Nordics. There's probably 95 different species out there who look similar to Nordics.
Oh.
And there's both good and bad in that group. So essentially, you have Nordic people here in the United States, Nordic-type people. You've got them all over Europe. And that Aryan thrust was to be the number one in Germany, and the rest of them were either going to be slaves or they're going to be murdered.
Hmm.
And I'm just saying what the real situation was and the agreements that were made with the reptilians. And this was a major program. And planet Earth would have been nothing but a slave planet, period.
That's pretty close to that now, isn't it, Bill?
It's sure getting that way. But I'm sort of asking for the technicals that are involved in the audience to try to look into this, try to dig into what we've just said, because we haven't been told this. We've been lied to in every aspect of extraterrestrial for thousands of years. And we need this disclosure, but we also need what we just said. We need to understand that. We need to understand that there's different humanoid-type people, extraterrestrials out there.
Okay.
Some are fortunately really good and are helping. But we need to realize that not all of them are wearing white hats.
Well, I would agree with that, just on the basis of our conversation and what I've been exploring and researching for 25 years, I agree. The other problem here, of course, is this globalist elite that's running the planet into the ground, putting it in total slavery to usury, debt, the financial game, is now trying to take down individual national identity by overrunning Europe with Muslim so-called refugees here in the United States, formerly United States, with Mexican and Hispanic illegal refugees, and now Muslim refugees. We are under attack. What I'm saying ultimately is there is a lot to be said for the argument that the white race, the Caucasian race, is marked for either extinction or certainly relegation to a very low level. We are under attack. Is that correct?
That's correct. And actually, your president is the biggest cause of the problem. He has everything that man has accomplished of his mission. He's accomplished it, and they haven't stopped him.
Correct.
And we don't want to accept this part either, that all of the Republican and many of the Democrats have had mind control. So they didn't. They haven't stopped him. They've let him do it. And you're getting your country is being torn apart at the very base. This thing of lying about our entire history has got to be stopped, and this is the reason we need disclosure. We need disclosure because we need enough people to know what has taken place, and enough people of that group that will participate. We need to participate in this thing, not just let the other guy do it. It's very important.
What can people do that are listening right now to help stave off the obvious and really undeniable attack on the white race? Anything that you can think of? I mean, if any other race were under attack for extermination, it would be front page news, but we're not allowed to talk about the fact the white race has been marked for extinction.
Yes, and the only thing that they can do is contribute by getting involved themselves personally in what's taking place. Get with the organizations that are doing the investigation. Work with them. Contribute. Don't just let this thing continue to be covered up. The media needs to be removed. It needs to be redone. We need to change the entire philosophy of this thing going into insanity in this country and in other free countries on the planet. You talk about bankruptcy. You talk about all the things that are being done that are not allowing us to accomplish what we need to do. This is because we don't have the knowledge.
Right. Well, knowledge is often said to be the most powerful weapon of all. It's let out. in drips and drabs, and then it's pulled back and hidden away from people to control them. It's used. It's been knowledge, and reality has been weaponized.
You're right. Yes.
It's used as an instrument of control. We're working on getting these pictures up. Probably we'll do this on our next visit, Bill. We'll go through all the pictures. There are about a dozen of them. Maybe Frank can send me whatever others he has, and we'll add those to this group. Some of them look a little bit suspect, but many of them look very much vintage, accurate, correct, 1930s and 40s kinds of vintage photographs. They're black and white, very interesting material. Let me bring George and Frank back on here. Frank, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's okay. Interesting, Jeff, that when Bill received the photographs, he said some of them look very similar to what he had been shown from the operatives back when he were debriefing them in the early part of the war.
We'll have him back, and we'll do that and go through these pictures in a week or so.
Sure.
And if you have any others you want to add to this group, we'll make it one nice long photo trip, and we'll go through the whole thing.
It seems like somebody's releasing a lot of information regarding the German discs.
For years and years, you could find two or three blurry old black and white pictures. Now there are a lot of them out there. I'm a little concerned that some may be photoshopped. It's hard to tell when you get a crystal clear, very high resolution, high definition photograph from the 1930s. You kind of wonder. But some of them are very vintage looking and certainly appear to fit the time frame in which they were apparently taken. But we'll take a look at those in our next visit. So if you have any others you want to add,
just send them along.
Send them to me and send them to James, and we'll do that. George Feiler, are you there? Did we get George back? We lost George, and we were not able to reestablish contact with him. So thank you, George, for being here. You're probably listening, and we'll get you back on next time. Okay. Bill Tompkins, anything you want to add? This is another extraordinary conversation. We'll certainly invite you back another week or two, and we'll go through all these photographs as well. And if some of them are familiar to you as having come from the spies that were being rotated in and out of Nazi Germany during the war, and that you were involved in the debriefing of these people, that would be fascinating to hear your recollection of those images too.
Yes, very definitely. And I'd like to just add one other thing here. This is interesting, and we can talk about it maybe at the next meeting. But it's hard to believe that I flew a package to Burbank, California, and took it into Lockheed. And this is 1942. And you ask the questions, where did the Skunk Works come from in Lockheed? Skunk Works came from the information, the Navy information, the operatives' information that I briefed Lockheed on in 1942. And if we look at Douglas, the package that I took to Douglas, I took it both to the Escondido facility and to the Santa Monica facility.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, 10, 12 years later, I do the work for Douglas. And my boss in the electronics section did my record, got into it, and put me into the secret think tank. And here I am reviewing some of the same information that I had taken there 10 years earlier. This is getting really out. And then when you look at Northrop, you find out that Northrop, I'm in the laboratory at Northrop 2 years, and I'm working on a system that has no wings, no tail, no empennage aircraft of some sort, which is the opposite of the flying wing. I spent 2 years on this.
I can't even envision what you're describing. That's
okay. Do you see what I'm trying to say? This and the package that I gave to Jack Northrop. I didn't see him personally, but it was given to his top people while I was still in the Navy.
Huh.
And then later on, Northrop goes and buys the U.S. Navy's largest shipbuilding company, it's actually on the planet, for aircraft carriers.
Yes, so yes, we talked about that. And they
it's
were able
weird.
To build these enormous craft that were operating and maybe still are off planet. That's the story.
Yeah, Solar Warden.
Did Solar Warden. Ben Rich at the Skunk Works and Kelly Johnson, were they involved with any of this, or were they strictly involved with SR-71, F-117 kind of stealth aircraft?
They were both involved. Because they were wearing several hats.
Uh-huh. Like Hughes, but not quite as dynamic, I guess. As Hughes was a real fluke of a human being. They don't come along like that very often. That's remarkable.
He was.
What a mind. One wonders if he was possibly part E.T. You get a brain like that.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked that question, and that really may really be. He was tremendous.
Wow. All right, Bill, we have to say goodnight for this visit, but we'll schedule you to come back here maybe next week or the week right after, and we'll go through all these pictures of 1930s and 1940s era, apparently German flying saucers. And I've got them. Frank's going to send me some more. Frank will send you this evening the final interview with Jack Northrop, John K. Northrop, and a picture of Hughes. But this interview is also full of color film of the B-49, so you'll really enjoy seeing that.
Good, and I'll send it on to Bill.
Yeah, you already have it, Frank, I think.
Okay.
It should be there. Okay.
All right.
All right. Bill Tompkins, thank you very much. We'll talk to you in another week or two.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. I really am honored that we can do this.
Oh, these are great. Now, I have one other question for you. I asked you earlier, are there some things that you're not allowed to talk about? And you said, yes. I never want to push into areas that would get you in trouble, but I want to ask one other question. And we did touch on this briefly earlier. Are you being encouraged to disclose Solar Warden and other aspects of our conversation for the first time in order to get this information out in the world in which we live? Are you sort of...
I wish I could say that I am being, but unfortunately that hasn't happened yet.
So you're just doing this on your own? Wow.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I salute you. That's quite a brave thing you're doing. We'll talk soon, Bill.
Okay. Thank
All righty.
You.
Good
Have
night.
Have a good weekend.
You too. And Frank, thank you very much for arranging this. All I can say is, wow.
There's more surprises to come, Jeff.
Well, they're pretty amazing already. So we'll get something scheduled here in the next week or two, and we'll maybe June 10th, Friday night.
Okay.
Let's work on that.
All right, that sounds great, Jeff. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Okay, Frank. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. There you go. Two more hours of extraordinary conversation with Mr. Bill Tompkins. Wow. And we'll be back with hour number 3 in just a few minutes.